Hey, Brandon.
We're back.
Wow, this is fun. The Not a Thing podcast is recording again. This is episode 216.
It feels like episode one. But we know it's not.
It's not, because it's not just us here today, is it?
Hello?
Who is that?
Hello, gentlemen. This is Jürgen.
That's not the NSA?
It's not yet, anyway.
Well, yes. This is an interesting turn of events.
I've been welcomed into the fold.
Yes, yes. The podcast is expanding, but instead of having our podcast empire expand by adding another podcast, we just added another host.
We had a co-host baby 8 months later.
That's right. I've been welcomed into the bosom of the Not a Thing podcast, and I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Yes, it's exciting. Brandon, you pointed out that we're 8 months to the day recording from when we last posted a show, February 4th or 5th, right? It's the 5th today.
Yeah, February 5th. Yeah. And today's the 5th.
Yep. Although we're not
feels,
probably
feels like
gonna...
5 years ago.
Yeah.
It feels like a long time.
It does.
It's so 5 years in internet time, which is, you know, it's like forever, essentially.
It's so bad.
Yeah. But we're back. I don't know if folks listened to episode 215 recently. If you're listening to this right after that, you're probably like, what are you talking about? This is just the next episode. But
also, how did you get to this 8 months late? Come
on. Well, we a few things happened in the interim. We've taken a bit of a break because I think really the short form was that schedules were well out of whack. I had just started a new job. There were all sorts of different changes in all our lives, and I think we also wanted to make sure that the podcast sounded kind of cool and fresh and hip and whatever kids call it these days. I don't know. That is not
Alan had a birthday.
And that
I'm the only one that had a birthday between
I mean that took, it was only last week or something, but it did take something like 8 months to plan, so yeah. That could have probably been a significant factor.
It might have been
that's why we stopped, was so that he could plan that. Also, now with your new job, there's a whole assortment of things we can't talk about, so
true. Things such as no
redacted,
right?
Redacted. Yeah. That's where the NSA came in.
Yeah, we may address that on another show. I mean, one of the things that we ended up doing was along with bringing in Jürgen, who has been on the show numerous times. I think part of it was kind of injecting some interesting kind of freshness to it, but then also kind of making sure we got back to like the core stuff. Because I don't know about you guys, but I listened back all the way to zero. I listened to the zeroth episode about an hour ago.
you've been traveling a lot lately, so you've had a lot of airport time.
A little bit of time here and there. But I listened to the zeroth episode just to see, like, you know, how we sound. And it's really funny how fairly similar, I think, we sound, for better or for worse. But also, I think it really speaks to how well I think the show worked then, and hopefully will continue to work. So I think we have a couple ideas for how the show is going to go, or possibly going to go. We're going to try some new things here and there. I think one of the bigger things we're going to do is we're going to trim the kind of quick hits aspect of the show and kind of be a little more focused about like the different topics that we pick. We're also playing with the idea of having like segments.
Regular segments.
Yes.
I kind of feel like bringing Jürgen on as a co-host is like if Ken Jennings won all the things he did on Jeopardy and then Alex Trebek asked him to come be on the show as the co-host.
It's like some kind of Willy Wonka thing, except for Jeopardy. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and if you know what I'm talking about, then you're listening to the right podcast. If you don't, then maybe you should go listen to Serial or something. I don't know.
I like that. That's a statement right there. That's that should be in our that should be in like the quote section where you do you like this podcast 5 stars and why. It should be like that.
It's yeah. So we're gonna try a couple things. We'll see how it goes. We're also changing up the cadence of the show to be bi-weekly. So every other week. We're going to try and record and then post. We're also going to try and post more consistently on what day.
Insert day here.
Yes. I don't think we agreed on what day Rob is going to be.
We can edit that in later. Fix it in post.
We'll fix it in post. Fix it in post. Just like last time. It'll be okay.
Yeah, so you don't have to worry about getting separation anxiety because we're not going to be back the next week. I know we left you for 8 months, but we will be back every other week.
Seriously this
time. It's not going to be 8 weeks now. 8 months.
No. Never again.
Yeah. So let's see. How are we doing this? Am I starting?
I think so. You're the A.
Okay. We're going to start.
You're the Apple.
We're starting with our first kind of new interesting segment, actually. This is going to be the resident expert segment, the resident expertise segment. In this case, or in this segment of the show, one of us is going to pick a topic and then talk about it at length from personal experience. Whether that personal experience is actually qualifying as an expert or not is really based around the relative expertise of everyone else on the show.
I think it'd be a great name for an autobiography, their relative expertise.
It's pretty
nice.
Good. But in this case, what I decided to make my topic on is something that I've been doing probably on and off for the last 3 years now, and that is intermittent fasting, which is a thing that came up while I was researching different kinds of tips and tricks to make diets work and stuff like that. I about more than 3 years ago now, probably more like 6 years ago, I had a pretty good cholesterol number scare. Like my cholesterol was through the roof and I had this major like life event reactionary kind of action where I ate no meat for something like 3 months in order to get my cholesterol down. And that worked. But I also felt terrible afterwards, so I think it was a good kind of realignment of what I thought was healthy. So I ended up changing up a bunch of stuff about how I did food and diet and exercise and sleep and stuff like that. And most of that, I think, has stuck. The last time I took my cholesterol, which was maybe a year ago, it was good. I mean, it wasn't wonderful, but it was much, much better than it was. I'm not, as far as I know, in danger of crazy things anymore. The big one being, like, I didn't want to have to take like drugs in order to get my cholesterol down and stuff like that.
No, so, drugs are for fun.
You're right. Let's be clear. Drugs
How do we do questions? Do we do questions? Is it okay if I interrupt you? I mean, this is a new segment, so we're shaping it as we go along. So I just figured I'd ask up front.
Sure.
The you felt crap after not having eaten meat for 3 months, physically, or was it an emotional loss, like a friend had left?
It's definitely both. I mean, I think I was eating the wrong things in order to not eat meat because my whole thing was, oh, how do I lower cholesterol? I must not eat meat because meat has cholesterol. Turns out cholesterol's in a lot of foods and you kind of do need it. So in the realignment of stuff, I ended up working a lot of meat back into my diet. In fact, the diet that I kind of worked towards was a mostly paleo diet.
Love paleo.
The thing, I mean, the short form for paleo is that you're eating foods that are close or similar to what people were eating at the dawn of kind of human existence and evolution, which I think can get a little too hippy-dippy if you look too far into it. But If you look at it from a very, very just kind of macro point of view, it's you don't eat processed foods, and that mostly ends up working, and it tends to be a little lower carb. And that also kind of comes out. The rationale behind that is that paleo humans didn't do agriculture yet. They were still hunter-gatherer, and, you know, so like agriculture kinds of things. So things like wheat and breads and refined things like that are not in the diet. And I think that worked for me actually exceptionally well. But one thing that I had found was I'd found a thread maybe 3 years ago or something, and that's how the intermittent fasting thing came in, which was not only were humans hunter-gatherers, they couldn't really depend on food on, say, an abundant level that we have now. Like, I can get food whenever I want, pretty much. I mean, there are apps that can get me food within an hour. I can walk to, you know, any direction in five blocks and probably find a fast food place. And it's the kind of thing where food is just everywhere, right? So the intermittent fasting rationale is that you have to let your body get back into a state where it is hungry on purpose, kind of. You're putting stress on your body in order to kind of get it back to a more natural state, because we are in an overeating kind of state. And I don't mean California, but...
yeah, I feel like the Midwest has a speed on that.
Yeah, right. So in an intermittent fasting, there are different kind of ways to pull that off. The ones I've seen are something's called the 5-2 diet, where you eat 5 days in a row normally, yes. And then the other 2 days you eat like very, very low, like not zero, but... like one meal ish, kind of 500 calories is what I've seen as a number. The other one is the restricted feeding window, where you say, I'm going to eat, but only between an 8 hour window. So between like noon and 8 PM. So you'll essentially just skip breakfast every day or something.
So it's like the Ramadan diet.
That's it. Right. That's one way, too. Yes. I mean, the way that I do my fasting is I do a dinner-to-dinner fast. So I ate dinner last night. So in prep for this show, I intermittently fasted. I fasted all day today. So I ate dinner last night. I ate a big old steak. It was great. I had, you know, normal food with actually a coworker of mine, who I never see. So we were eating and drinking, and it was a really good time. Fast forward overnight, this morning I woke up, skipped breakfast at the hotel, I did all my stuff over the course of the day, and then maybe an hour ago, hour and a half ago, I had dinner, and dinner was,
yes,
frankly...
Please tell us what dinner was, because that's not what I consider connect with fasting, well, so this is interesting.
Yeah, so what I do is I eat... a big dinner. I ate probably like my day's worth of calories in this dinner. I ate a four meat barbecue plate. So that was it's meant for two people. That's what it says on the menu. It's meant for two people, which is
or one Alan.
You're right. One fasted Alan. So it was brisket, pulled pork, smoked sausage, and burnt ends, which are brisket that is kind of normally too tough, so they throw it back on the grill after swirling it in barbecue sauce so it caramelizes. Oh, plus the sides, which are collard greens and coleslaw. And
that sounds like 500 calories.
Yeah, it's a little more, maybe. It was easily the number of calories that I would have eaten today, probably, anyway. So what happens for me is that I end up not eating less calories. And I think some... intermittent fasting regimens also don't subscribe to the eating less calories aspect. And in this respect, it's not like a weight loss thing. I mean, certainly doing a 5-2 diet, you're going to eat less calories because you're skipping 2 days worth of food, essentially. The restricted feeding window, the idea is that you're eating one less meal. So maybe that lunch and that dinner are a little bit bigger, but in theory, they're less than if you ate 3 meals. My dinner-to-dinner fast, it's difficult, I think. unless you're me, apparently, to eat like a whole day's worth of food in one meal. So what happens is, generally, it is more restrictive. You're eating less food. So from a weight loss perspective, you probably are eating a little bit less. But for me, what I find is that there is some benefit to like putting your body under that little bit of stress. I do drink water all day. So it isn't the Ramadan fast, because if you were strict about it, you would not drink water.
Also, you wouldn't have had pork.
Right. That does become kind of an issue, because I do love me some pork. But in any case, by putting your body under some of that stress, I notice that I'm much more in tune with when I'm actually hungry, because there is that kind of, I sort of am hungry a little bit so I can snack kind of feeling. And I really dislike that, because I don't have a stop point trigger for food, as you may have guessed from my crazy dinner, is that if there's a lot of food around, I was always raised to, you have to finish what's on, you know, the plate in front of you, which is bad, because I can keep putting food on that plate and it will still be eaten. So when I'm deliberately trying to restrict my intake, I have to be much more kind of cognizant about what I put on my plate. So I don't really do it from a weight loss perspective. It's more just from a kind of clarity perspective about what hunger really feels like. So I can be more in tune with it on days when I'm not fasting. It's like, oh, I'm not actually hungry, because actually hungry is probably like 3 o'clock on the day that I do a dinner to dinner fast. So it's a lot different. So I know that, I think, if you're looking at this from a weight loss perspective, I think really just injecting any regularity into your diet, no matter what it is, maybe it's just, it doesn't even have to be as strict as like intermittent fasting. If it's any amount of regularity in your diet, there's just something about that that causes you to, the consistency that forces causes you to eat less. Like people say, take a picture of your food. It's actually not taking the picture of your food. I think it is just the consistency that's there, because we're so used to eating and kind of grazing and picking up as much food as we can from different sources. If you build in some consistency, even just a little bit, I've found that I end up losing weight, even if I'm not eating less. It's just because it's more consistent. My schedule is generally kind of all over, so adding that consistency back, I think, helps my body be more regular or normal or whatever.
And then how's your cholesterol affected by this?
It's good. I mean, I checked it again a year ago. I've been doing it for about 2 years. Like, I'll do it maybe once a week. I'll just pick a day, and sometimes it's on purpose, and sometimes it's because I skip breakfast, and I'm like, all right, I guess it's a fast day. And then I'll just drink water and coffee the whole rest of the day. I drink coffee with no cream. It's just black, no sugar. I think that doesn't count as food, because it's just dirty water.
Have you ever tried one of those diets where, like, there was a bullet coffee?
Yeah.
Where you put the butter in it?
Bulletproof coffee. Yeah, you blend a stick of butter, or not a whole stick, but like a pat of butter and some other stuff sometimes, like coconut oil, into a coffee, and then you drink it. And then the deal is that there's so much fat in it that your body resets and says, you don't need food anymore for, like, hours.
You call this a diet?
Well, you wouldn't do it all, like, that's not the only thing you would eat, but you would do that instead of eating breakfast.
Yes. That seems, like something my body would not be happy with me if I tried.
Yeah, like, high-fat diets, I think, are interesting, but it comes back to that idea that you have to be eating, like, good fats, right? You have to be eating fat that, you know, isn't crazy
fish
fried or whatever, right?
Yeah, and a lot of fish. Yeah, I've tried the 5-2 one. A friend of mine had huge success with it. I think he lost like 50 pounds doing the 5-2 and stuck with that for a couple of years.
Wow.
And was very successful with that. So I've heard good things about that. But personally now I'm doing the paleo thing and I'm very happy with that. I'm trying to eat a lot more, or actually a lot less food, and then base it on the paleo diet, and that seems to be working out okay.
Yeah, I had a lot of success with that, I think. Although what ended up happening for me is that I would definitely eat more protein than I needed, because I do like how meat tastes. Mm. And so
that's my impression.
Yeah, it ended up being like I would eat a whole lot of greens and everything else, but then I would eat a whole lot of meat too. So calorically, I think it was good. It was very high, but it was all quote unquote healthy. So from a like cholesterol point of view or other metrics point of view, I was still eating healthy. I was just eating too much. So I still have that as an issue. But yeah, intermittent fasting. It's not for everyone, but I like it. It's something to try. There are a few other ways to do it, but I think the dinner to dinner might be like a little too dangerous. I think the restricted feeding window is something that is easily triable, even if just for, you know, a weekend or something, just skip breakfast and eat normally for lunch and dinner. But again, that lunch and dinner, you have to be kind of, in my opinion, if you were using it as a weight loss thing, you have to be kind of cognizant about what you're eating. It's not just eat whatever you want.
They need also to come the name, up with a better name.
Yeah, the name has to go.
That
sounds like something you expose people to who are chained in a cellar.
It's like a terrible carnival activity.
Yes. The children will not eat yet.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, it's just a bunch of pies behind bulletproof glass.
Yes. Oof, with dancing clowns.
Cade. Well, that is my segment, unless you guys had any more questions. Should we go to segment two and see how that transition goes?
Is there a transition sound?
We get some sort of like whoosh noise.
I'm like, do we need a bumper to play when we go from one segment to another?
That might help.
That sounds like some pretty high production value.
Yeah. Well, take it away, Brendan.
Yes, my segment, this is probably one familiar to anyone who's listened to the show before, is technology. We spent a lot of time talking about that.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to keep talking about it because it's cool.
We're fans of it.
It's a thing.
It's a thing.
Yes.
It's our first It's a Thing of the revival.
Well done.
Yeah, do we come down on whether intermittent fasting is a thing? It seems like, Alan, you think it is. What do you think, Aaron?
I'm on the fence. It's a thing for some people. I'm on the fence whether it's a thing for me personally. But I don't know if that's the question.
I would say it's a thing because I'm willing to try it.
Yeah.
It'll be different than the Gunna diet that I'm currently on. it's where you're gonna get on a diet every week and then you don't.
Right.
Diet starts tomorrow. It's my favorite t-shirt.
But no, we will travel into the past through the future. I want to talk about the BFR.
Yeah, I'm excited.
As it's been called in some publications, the Big Falcon Rocket.
Mm-hmm.
As it's been called in other publications, the Big Fucking Rocket.
I like those publications better.
Yeah.
It's really funny because in at the end of Die Hard, not to spoil Die Hard, but...
Whoa.
Do we have a time limit for that stuff? Spoilers? Like if it's older than 20 years?
Not for Die Hard. If you haven't seen Die Hard yet and you've found what a podcast is, reevaluate your life.
Oh, sorry. Is it Die Hard 2 that I'm thinking of?
Oh, maybe.
I am thinking of Die Hard 2. Yes. Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Then I don't blame anyone for not knowing that.
You can
that
just miss
no.
So at
no
the end,
that is.
At the end of Die Hard, if you're watching it on network television, Die Hard 2, if you're watching it on network television, it is Yippee-ki-yay, Mr. Falcon.
Oh, that's terrible.
That's what I learned recently.
See, whenever I see Falcon, I think Falcon Punch. But that's because I played too much Nintendo 64 in my childhood.
Yeah, you did.
Well, I don't, not to drift too far off topic, but we checked out the show, The Good Place, this week, and I'm impressed by the writers because the main character ends up in a place like heaven where it's impossible to swear. So every time she tries to swear, they switch out the swear word with a similar sounding regular word. And it's very, the writing around the similar to swear word sounding words was a stellar.
Bullshit and mother forker.
Yes, a lot of those ones.
Yeah, it's a good show. I enjoy it.
but tell me of this BFR. What are we talking about here?
This is the newest offering from real life Tony Stark, Elon Musk. It is a new rocket and space vehicle that they're going to deploy to. It seems like everything. He wants to use it to go to the moon. He wants to use it to go to Mars. He wants to go to use it from New York to Shanghai. It's going to be everywhere.
I am most excited about that third thing. I think I did see a little bit of news about it.
Pitch is most places you can travel on the Earth in 30 minutes, everywhere on Earth in under an hour.
That's so awesome.
For the cost of an airline ticket, approximately.
Sign me up.
An economy class airline ticket.
maybe not like Spirit Airlines economy, though. Maybe like United economy, maybe, right?
I don't know if I'd want to go on United. If it's on a rocket. You'd drag me off a rocket.
Oh, that's something that happened in the intervening time. Yes, the United passenger dragging, not a thing.
Oh, we've all forgotten about that. We're all flying United again now, right? Aren't we?
I'm not.
Although
I think back to the quaint times when Southwest asked Kevin Smith to get off a plane or get an extra seat, and that's adorable compared to what's happening now on airlines.
True.
So the BFR is going to replace all the current like line of rockets that they're testing.
Yeah, the Falcon 9 and the Dragon all getting replaced.
And the Falcon Heavy, right? Which hasn't actually launched yet.
Right, so before that's even launched, like, wait, we came up with a better idea. He wants to create a moon base.
Yes.
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 So... the nice thing is the older rockets, or other rockets, not that old, they were partially refuelable, so or reusable. So mm-hmm. there were parts that were not reused.
Right.
This thing is 100% reusable.
Oh wow!
So they can it's a ship, basically. Mm-hmm. it's real big. It's was it 106 meters tall?
Oh,
31 Raptor engines.
Are we going metric now?
Is that for my benefit? Thank you. Thank you very much.
It is for yours.
Yes. That would be around 320 feet then.
Oh, thank you for doing that for me.
It's for your benefit. It's just a gentle payback.
Okay.
Also, so the Falcon Heavy, they're saying, could hold about 30 tons of cargo.
Mm-hmm.
And this holds 150. So this is a big fucking rocket.
Yeah.
This is the big BFG.
R.
R.
Yes. And, it goes 18,000 miles an hour. So.
Wow. How do you feel sitting on something like that? Like, how uncomfortable is that on a scale of 1 to
They said it's about
negative?
2 to 3 Gs.
Wow.
So that seems... it's not going to be something. I mean, I'm conflicted about this because it's very exciting. It's a cool idea. It's a good use of technology. But there's so many things that can go wrong, and there's so many things that it's not going to – like not everybody can handle that kind of G-force. People getting sick, the loading times, the fact that these things are full of fuel and are just flying bombs. I mean, there's a lot of problems, but it's a really good idea.
Yeah. I'm kind of excited to see how that works, because if you can travel anywhere in the world – because the thing I saw – the demo video I saw has people getting on a little boat, and that boat goes out to where the rocket is moored out in the ocean, which I assume is done so the sonic boom of it taking off doesn't, like, flatten everyone nearby. And they obviously can't do that everywhere in the world.
That's why you have Hyperloop.
Oh! So I like
that.
You have
a connected network of rockets and Hyperloop, and you can get anywhere on the planet.
I do like this. I do like this. This is the future liberals want, at least this one. I do appreciate this angle.
I want my Star Trek, and I want it now.
Yes, I was promised flying cars.
Oh, speaking of the cars and Elon Musk, I will give an update that I am still in, as far as I know, the November to January group for the Tesla Model 3.
Yes, please.
Unfortunately, Tesla just released the number of cars they produced in September. They were supposed to produce 30 in August, 1,500 in September, and then ramp up from there. They produced all of 220 in September. So somewhat smaller of a number. So that's not a thing for a
about
little
a
while.
Sixth. That's not a thing for a little while. No. Once it becomes a thing, I think we should do a podcast recording from inside your Tesla.
that's going to happen.
We're just going to get all three of us together in one car, and we're going to Tesla the shit out of that.
Well, also, while it's driving us around, we will do the show.
I mean, that is the future that I want anyway.
So you've got a November to January release.
Yes.
Elon is saying he wants to be to Mars by 2022.
Okay.
Which is in 5 years.
All right.
Oh,
so
from somewhere, maybe Bloomberg this week, who came out and said that it seems every time Tesla have earnings calculation of when they're going to start making money, they say that it's going to be by this time, and then 2 years later, it's going to be 2 years later, and 2 years later, it's going to be 2 years later. So they're starting to get some flack over when they're supposedly starting to make money as well. So the postponing of timelines is something that they are doing these days.
Mm. Yeah, I think you have to take those timelines with a grain of salt. I don't think he's ever made a timeline, honestly.
Well, he's made up a lot of timelines.
That's true.
But he has not made any timelines.
But, I mean, but you can't...
I don't think so either.
And I don't think you can argue with the final results do work. It's just not necessarily on time. So I'm still hopeful that when I get a Model 3, it'll be awesome, because I saw one like a week ago, and it looked great. It wasn't moving or anything, but it looked really cool.
I have to say, in doing research on the BFR, because why would you not? It's pretty cool. I was watching some videos of SpaceX rockets taking off and landing,
mm-hmm.
and it looks pretty stable. I think it looks like it could be reliable. But then I started watching videos of the Blue Origin rockets from Bezos.
Uh-huh.
What are those?
Those other rockets.
Oh, yes.
They are. They look better. like a smoother ride.
I've seen the one where it takes off straight up and then comes straight back down. And it looks impressive. I mean, because you can see the whole thing, whereas with the SpaceX rockets, you're only seeing it for the few fractions of a second that it's coming in, and it seems to be a harder landing for the Falcons.
There's a lot more fire.
Yeah,
like you don't see the same fire trail on the Blue Origin rockets that mm-hmm. you do on the SpaceX.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Maybe they'll do something. Throw their hat in the ring.
Yeah, I think more possibility for going into space is better.
If they're going to keep cutting NASA's budget, then this stuff has to happen.
Yeah.
Well, the guy who was just put in charge of NASA, though he doesn't believe in climate change, so he doesn't want them to spend time on that hooey anymore, Chinese hoax. But what he does believe in is moon mining and colonizing planets. So there's hope.
Moon mining, somewhere to send the pores.
Yes.
Oh,
wait,
not,
that's me. No.
Not a thing. Not a thing. Okay.
No, nothing.
Okay. Well, I definitely think the BFR is a thing.
BFR is definitely a thing.
I hope that's coming soon, sooner than 2022. But we'll see. And if we're still on the air then, we can check back in to this show and go insert episode here. Oh, wait, that's this one, 216.
Nice.
Also, please don't rush that process. Like, yes. Yeah, I want it 2022, but you know, if you got to take a couple extra years to make it safer, I'm fine with that.
Safety third, you know.
Yeah, it's the Mike Rowe method. Yes.
Awesome.
Jurgen, you want to take your segment away?
Yes. So I have been doing some. I have a 7.5-year-old son, and when I was in Vegas with my friend a few weeks ago, we discovered the Lego concept store in Vegas, which of course is gigantic because how many dads have you had in Vegas who have needed to buy something to bring home to their children? When they've been... That's the only thing that happens in Vegas that doesn't stay in Vegas is the giant Lego sets from the concept store there. And so I started looking at the Lego brand and the Lego company. And it's actually a company with a really interesting innovation story, I turned out. And for those who know me, I work in things like that, those circles. So it's fascinating when you have a company that's been around for a long time and seeing how they've been close to going bankrupt several times. And this is one of them. Are still innovating and doing new stuff and actually building their brand in really interesting ways. So it was started in right around the end of World War I, I think, and by a Danish guy, and he made toys in wood. And then his factory burned down, his little wood shop, and he built it up again. And he made more toys, also in wood. And then that burned down. And then he built it up again because his toys were popular. And then this was at the end of World War II when he realized that this plastic stuff that is just coming on the market is pretty interesting. And maybe I should start exploring that. So he started building his toys in plastic instead and invented this little chip, the Lego brick, that he then started building things with. And it grew, and his family took it over and expanded. And, you know, everyone who's in my generation who grew up in the 70s or 80s, they grew up with Lego as a part of their lives. Maybe over here a little later, I don't know. But about 10 years ago, they were really close to going out of business because they'd been losing money. And what they did to survive, I think, is a really interesting thing because they co-branded and started co-branding their product even more to a mad extent than they had previously. You have the Star Wars stuff, you have
Batman,
Harry Potter, Batman, and that kind of stuff. And I think it's just a really interesting way that they've gone about saving their brand and reinventing their brand. And are still doing it. I mean, the Lego movie came out a couple of years ago, and at first I thought it was like someone's drunk joke, but it turned out to be a huge success, and it spawned the Lego Batman movie and the Lego Ninjago movie, which I saw last week with my son, and he loved it. I liked it,
and
it's just fascinating. But then again, it'll be very interesting to see what they do now because, you know, since they started co-branding and collaborating and doing the movies and lots of TV shows on Netflix, they've grown again and they've been successful. But this year sales were down, and so when sales are down, the analysts get grumpy, and then you have to lay off lots of people. So they just laid off 1,800 people, which is like 5% of their workforce, and said that they were going to start tightening the buttons and belts and look for new ways of innovating and collaborating. So once again, now they're kind of threatened a little bit, not so much by a factory burning down or a brand new material being scarce of materials because World War II, but maybe the market is a little full of what they're doing. It'll be interesting to see. And also, supposedly the movies are just getting worse, but I don't know.
I blame Minecraft.
Yeah, Minecraft, or as my son calls it, Minecraft.
Oh,
that's adorable.
Yeah, you can't. There's some things you can't correct. You know, they got their old things. But yeah, Minecraft can play a role.
Yeah, I mean, have you ever played with Minecraft?
No.
Okay, so I know someone that is a Minecraft fanatic, and he's only 4, so it's fair. But it's like it is his day and night. Like, it completely consumes him. I've seen him build stuff, and it really is this, like, I can do whatever I want, and there are really no limits. Whereas if you have, you know, a Lego playset, you run out of pieces eventually. I remember building all sorts of crazy stuff, but then eventually you do run out of pieces. And in Minecraft, you can just kind of zoom out and then move over, and then there's more space. So nice. I think there is kind of a, like, there's the immediacy factor. There's the, I don't have to, you know, worry about running out of stuff or space factor. It's something you can do without a whole lot of kind of moving around. I'm not saying kids are lazy, because they're not, right? They're very active. So it's surprising when you can, like, pin them down for some amount of time, and it seems to, like, work. I think it links a lot of a similar kind of creative juices that that Lego does. And if you're not playing the game part of it, because there is a, like, thin thread of a game where you're trying to fight zombies in Minecraft, but, I mean, if you just kind of ignore that part and you're just using it to build things, it really is kind of a, you know, big playground that is, it again, you know, built on little blocks that you can kind of just arrange.
Yeah.
I think, and actually, Max Brooks just wrote a novel about Minecraft.
Really?
Yeah. The writer of the Zombie Survival Guide and yes. World War Z.
Yes.
You know, the good book, not the crappy movie.
Right, right.
Huh. Yeah, his newest novel is called Minecraft, and it's about a character in Minecraft.
Oh my gosh. That is totally going on the list. I have to read it first, but that is going to go on a gift list for somebody real soon.
Somebody you know.
Yes.
Cool. No, but I did read that they are doing lots of research in AR and VR and all of the Rs, and I do think that they're probably pretty inspired by Minecraft, as we say, in that sense. I mean, there's as AR and VR are becoming more commonplace with the game consoles and everything. I think there's definitely opportunity for that kind of stuff, to have virtual blocks instead of physical blocks and so on. There's lots of interesting space to operate in within that.
I think there's something interesting, though, about having a limited number of pieces. So you could build this amazing thing, and then you've built it, and you play with it, and then you have to destroy it. Because you're going to build something else.
Yes. And we've only just started saving the instruction manuals of all the pieces. We didn't do that for the first couple of years because, well, he inherited my gigantic box of old Legos, and then you just build whatever you want, and you take it down the next day, you build something else. It really is a genius toy. But then as we started getting some of the Ninjago cool castles and tanks and everything now, then we had to start saving the instructions so we could redo it later.
That playset that I've seen him play with is impressive. There are a lot of pieces and not like normal, this is a rectilinear brick kind of pieces either. It's a lot fancier than I remember.
Yeah, we didn't have missiles when I was a kid.
Yeah. They actually shot little bullets and stuff. I was surprised.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. It's very, very specialized now. Very all kinds of little specialized pieces all around. And it was pretty cool because he got that before he went to see the movie. So then when he went to see the movie, he was super excited. And he told everyone at school about it the next day and everything. So they they connect well, their brands.
Yeah, so I think we can all agree that Legos are a thing.
Yes.
I would say so. I would say so. It'll be interesting to see if they are a thing in, you know, 5 or 10 years and what sort of thing they are, because it could be that they change completely.
Well, they'll still have them on the moon, right? When we go to the moon, can we at least bring
them with the BFR?
Yeah.
Yes.
I hope so.
I hope so too.
So we're right at where I would consider like a medium good stopping point for the show. We all do have like one more topic, or do we? Maybe we do.
I just got a short one.
Should we try to fit those in just right now?
I'm up
2 minutes each?
Yeah, let's do that. Let's do that. Just like this is our quick hit section or
short form lightning round.
Yeah.
The pow-pow round. I like it.
Okay, all right. I'll lead off again with I ate yesterday the Impossible Burger. Or no, not yesterday, 2 days ago, the Impossible Burger. And you may have heard of this. We talked about it on the show in insert episode here about this is the burger that is made of soy and wheat and coconut oil and other stuff that isn't meat. And the deal is that it supposedly there's no cows, so it uses less land, less water, produces less greenhouse gas in the creation of it, and it's supposed to taste like meat.
Because let's just put it in perspective. I think a cow consumes 12,000 gallons of water a year or something like that.
Uh-huh.
So it would be better to not eat all the cows, even if they taste good.
Okay, well, I'm on board with that if there's a viable solution.
Yeah. See, this is where we're getting at. Take it away.
Right.
Take it away,
so,
Alan.
So I found the nutritional value, and interestingly enough, a similar sized burger, the Impossible Patty, I compared the patties. It's at exactly 220 calories between them. I normalized it to calories. You get five grams of carbs from the Impossible, 1 gram from the meat, which makes sense because it's meat. Mm-hmm. 20 grams of protein from the Impossible, and only 11 from the beef.
Oh.
And 13 grams of fat, but 28 in beef. So more fat, but less protein, interestingly. So what was really interesting, because I did have it, I had it in a burger, and it tasted pretty good. If you hadn't told me, what I would say is it tasted like an overdone burger. Like, I tend to like my burgers like a little bit of pink, so I have a very kind of specific palate around it. Interestingly, it took the char really well. Like, just eating the charred part when you first get into the burger tastes right. But when you start getting into the middle of it, what happened was I was eating it and some of the burger kind of fell apart a little bit. So I just kind of pushed it off to the side, finished the burger with all of the, you know, toppings and everything else. And I thought it tasted okay. But when I had just the Impossible Burger part alone, it tasted kind of bland. I mean, other than the outside of it, the texture is right. Interestingly, the inside of it tastes or feels right. So whatever they're doing with the different things in that to make it crunch right on the outside, but then still be a little juicy, tastes good. But from a flavor point of view, it's not there. It's it is kind of empty. Other than the char on the outside. So I would say it's very good. I'm not sure it would. I think the reason that it worked well, they're currently only selling it at certain restaurants, and the ones that they have them in at least California, are Umami Burger, which is a kind of, you know, fancy burger chain. And so there's always a lot of toppings. So what happens is with all of the toppings, it stands up with all of the toppings and it tastes fine, if a little overdone. But alone, it's just kind of bland. So I think they're not selling it to regular folks in stores because they don't want to have that experience of it, oh, it's just kind of bland. It needs to be dressed up with all sorts of other stuff and flavors for you to just kind of be like, okay, yeah, it tastes like a burger. That's fine.
If that's the price of saving the planet, then, I mean, I'll give it a shot.
Yeah. I think you should try it. It wasn't prohibitively expensive or anything. I think it was maybe a buck more than like the regular burgers were. And they give you two patties, so it's a little bigger. You're getting a fair amount of, you know, protein from it, so it's not bad.
Well, now I've got homework. I'm going to go check that out.
Yeah, I'm going to a concert in at Berkeley tomorrow, and I found out that just a 5 minutes drive from Berkeley, there is an Umami Burger, so I'm going to go try it out then tomorrow.
Nice.
And I actually saw that a couple of weeks ago, I saw that my local Safeway had a similar product in their next to the meat aisle. but it was not called the Impossible Burger. So mm-hmm. I think it was a competitor that had popped up. I did not dare eat it yet, but someday.
You see, let someone else go first, like Alan.
That was my obvious goal.
Do you need to wait like a week to make sure that I'm okay after that?
Yeah. How are you doing now, Alan? I'm in Oakland. Are you okay still?
Still now good? We've got a backup co-host.
Oh, nice.
Excellent.
Well, I just have a short little thing that I wanted to point out. And I don't know if you guys saw that thing came up online today. I'm pretty excited about the new Blade Runner movie.
Yes.
I'm sure you guys are not.
No. No, we would not be interested. It totally does not fit the timeline of the show. No.
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 So I'm trying to avoid reviews and full plot synopsis and everything until I get to watch it.
Yeah.
Hopefully over the weekend. But the hilarious thing is that there was this English morning show, a clip from an English morning show that came up online today, where Harrison Ford and Ryan Gosling are doing this, you know, the usual press junket where they travel around and then they have a hotel room for a day and like they just canoe in and out journalists who ask them the same questions. They have to try to act interested and all that kind of stuff for a day. But the journalist in this instance was absolutely hilarious. She was out of control. The funniest press interview like that I have ever seen. And they take it really well. She's trying to ask some questions about the original movie, and it's obvious that she hasn't seen it. She doesn't really know the plot about that one, and she's totally open about it. She's like, no, I haven't seen it. No, it was like way before I was born. And it's like she takes it beautifully, and they have a good time, which I think is so rare in those interviews that they actually enjoy what they're doing. So I highly recommend looking that up on the Twitter machine.
Yeah, well, we'll add that to the show notes, which we're going to continue to do every episode, and we'll have that linked in the show, so you can see that at notathingpodcast.com.
Yeah.
Take it away, Brendan.
I've just got one last little thing here. I feel like we've hit food, we've hit movies. I want to talk about music real quick. I noticed a weird thing over the last few weeks.
Yes. I think I noticed this too.
I went and saw the movie Logan Lucky, and in that movie, Channing Tatum stars in it, and heavily featured the song Take Me Home Country Roads by John Denver. So the next week, I'm in the movie theater again. I'm watching The Kingsman, The Golden Circle. It has Channing Tatum in it, and the song Take Me Home Country Roads by John Denver is heavily featured again. But in a two-week period, I have this same actor, the same song. So I just I looked on the internet. I was like, is this a thing? Turns out there are 6 different movies that came out this year that feature songs by John Denver.
Wow. Maybe he got a new agent.
I'm sorry to break the news to you, Jürgen, but he died.
Maybe his estate got a new agent.
Yeah, maybe.
Actually, that is exactly what happened.
Yeah, I was wondering if the rights expire or something like that. Or
the rights expired with their whoever the estate had the rights with, and they were bought by somebody else, and they decided this was a good time to get that back out.
Cash in. Yeah, interesting.
So when I first saw it happen, though, I thought, is this some sort of like appeal to reach the country base of America that is becoming more vocal in our current climate? And turns out it's not. I'm paranoid. I saw an interview with Matthew Vaughn, the director of Kingsman, and he said that he picked that song out 2.5 years ago.
Okay.
And was actually pretty upset that it was used. Ridley Scott used it in Alien Covenant as well. So he was kind of bummed that John Denver's going to make a comeback. He thought he was going to lead it, but got beat to the punch.
Well, I didn't see Alien Covenant, so...
Neither did I.
It's probably fine.
Did anyone? Yeah.
I wanted to, but only sort of. Because apparently I didn't see it in the theater.
I never want to see it enough.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we are... I think we're wrapped for the episode. So without too much... fanfare. We're going to be back in 2 weeks or so, hopefully 2 weeks. Consistently, we're going to do our best on insert day here. And I'm glad to be back. And it is great to have you on the show, Jürgen.
Well, it is great to be here. Thank you very much, gentlemen. I look forward to doing this frequently throughout the coming years and months.
Excellent. Brennan, I will talk to you and Jürgen in 2 weeks.
Until next time, both of you.
Take care.